always defend your idea. And I don't mean necessarily defend the idea because you want to go home and watch Netflix. I mean, if you can defend your idea, you can sell it.
Hello, I'm Renee Vaughan Sutherland, and welcome to Greater Than 11%, a weekly podcast that explores roles and opportunities within the creative industries, with the aim of contributing to increasing diversity across the board, in addition to promoting some awesome women. For episode 71, we are joined by our final guest in our first of no doubt many trips to Scotland by the incredible creative director, Hilary Joiner. Hilary and I met at Wacol Gather Scotland last year and got discussing over a couple of delightful gin and tonics about the lack of diversity in relation to creative director roles. She recalled that in 2004, when she made her transition from art director to creative director, she was one of the only few known women to hold the role in Edinburgh. 2004, folks, it isn't that long ago. And yes, there has been some progression, but both Hilary and I agreed it needs to come quicker. Hilary studied fine art at Edinburgh University, graduating with a master's and landing a role at creative agency Smarts. She then moved on to Big Communications before landing a role at ISA Smarts, where she rose through the ranks, establishing herself as a creative director, working with a wide range of clients such as Prudential, Standard Life, and Scotsman's Publications. In 2007, she decided to set up as an independent creative and freelance under the guise of Little Ego. She continued to work for big brands, but also small, offering her talents and skills in design, advertising, strategy, brand, and art across a vast range of sectors, from fashion to renewable energy. In 2016, she joined Stripe Communications as their in-house creative director, responsible for developing and delivering Stripe's creative capabilities. She is super passionate about creativity and has spoken on the subject for the Marketing Society Scotland and has been a judge for the Pioneering Spirits Award, whose focus is seeking the best marketing campaigns from across the world. Hilary, you're well aware since we met, it was my mission to get back to Edinburgh to nab some interviews with some awesome creatives. I'm so pleased we've made it happen, and with a heap of help from yourself. Welcome to Greater Than 11%.
Thank you, and it's great for you to be here. So I want to launch straight in and wondering if you could tell me what it is a creative director role does.
My role as creative director at Stripe, top level, is controlling the brand narrative, creative narrative. Stripe, we tell stories. We don't necessarily respond to creative briefs in the sense of the background that have come through advertising. What I do is help propel that creative forward so that we can amplify it and build in it as much as we possibly can. It's basically a springboard into ideas. At Stripe, we have two types of creativity. Everybody is creative at Stripe. So I'm not actually a creative director that sits in an ivory tower and people come to me. I'm actually very much more organic within Stripe. I'm there to help nurture creativity. I help with our brand and look after our brand, but also I am the senior leader within what you would call the creative professional service aspect of Stripe, which is the design content.
I'm wondering if we can rewind a little bit and you can tell us your career journey and trajectory from where it began up until now.
So I'm going to go right back to start. From a very young age, I was always interested in art. I come from a background where creativity was everywhere, but actually both my parents didn't have careers in a creative role. So creativity was very much part of my existence, but not seen as necessarily something I was going to do or you would do as a career, if that makes sense. And then when I went to school at my senior school in Glasgow, that's when it started to become much more part of where I wanted to go forever. And we had the most amazing art department in a school that I was at. They were very traditional from the point of view that they came from Glasgow School of Art. And they kind of pushed me into that space, but I loved going into that space. Mm-hmm. Our school was actually very much like St. Trinian's in that we had this bizarre, it was called Reith House because Lord Reith used to live there. It was a rambling school in the middle of Glasgow. It's just a townhouse, but the art department was in the attic and it was just like a treasure trove of stuff that we could go up. I spent a lot of my time in there, but I also spent a lot of my time at the Kelvin Grove. My school was in between Kelvin Grove Museum and Art Gallery and the Glasgow School of Art. Mm. And between those two massively inspiring creative institutions, who wouldn't, if they were going in that direction, you know, kind of just feel pulled towards that as a career and just inspiration. At school, I became more and more orientated towards art. I was did art as a subject. I did an A-level art. It was beginning to look like I was thinking of going into art school. The other very important thing that happened, actually, and it's huge relevance to us sitting here right now in this space, was there was an artist that inspired me called Alison Watt. You've probably heard of her, Renee. And she at the time was just a little bit older than me. Mm-hmm. And I saw her and I just wanted to be her. I dressed like her. I did. I just followed her almost. Yeah. But she inspired me to actually go into a career and go to art school and study art or become an artist. The only problem was I was desperate to be independent. And as much as I loved Glasgow Art School, I wanted to move away from home. So I went to Edinburgh. Mm. Edinburgh also offered a course called, it was an MA in Fine Art as opposed to a BA in Fine Art. The difference between the MA and the BA is the MA is a joint degree, reading art history whilst practicing art, being an artist. So it's a 5-year course. It's a big investment of your time, big slog. But actually, I think that in itself, that choice was almost indicative of where I was going to go, is it going into communications, which is that practical meet theory. Mm-hmm. All the other choices when I was considering going to university were law. So actually Edinburgh was the only course that I decided that I was going to really go for. And if I didn't get that, I wasn't going to go. Thank God.
Yeah.
Thank God that happened. And I ended up on that journey going to Edinburgh University. Obviously, the course was a lot of reading. All through my further education, it was theory and practical. And I would see both sides of that world. And again, I think that really gives you a grasp or molds you into a particular person. Because the people that read about art history understand it, but they don't have that tactility, that humility to actually be in there and understand how difficult it is to make a colour speak to a viewer. They can regurgitate and they can talk about it, but they don't necessarily understand that it's just such a difficult thing to turn the abstract into something physical just by a nuance of a brush or a use of a colour. So combining of those two worlds, I think, again, made me move towards the way I was thinking to go into the environment that I was. And I think also, and this is a bugbear of mine, and people constantly say this to me, but I think as women, is that self-doubt. I was always happy in the art department. I was always happy painting and drawing, but I was never confident that I necessarily wanted people to tell me I wasn't, and it was not tell me that I wasn't right. What's the word?
Didn't belong.
Yeah, that was personal to me. You know what it's like in a creative process. You don't necessarily get enjoyment in the creative process. In fact, if you are getting enjoyment in the creative process, you're probably not really pushing the boundaries hard enough. The judgment, the time of judgment, I just didn't really feel I needed that. So from my point of view, maybe it was a lack of confidence, but also maybe it's just because I always wanted to own that space and not have other people tell me it's right or wrong. This is mine. I've gone on this journey. This is a piece of artwork that I've produced. That's probably the reason I didn't go into art completely.
It goes back to what you're saying though, that it's a real vulnerability to make work and put yourself out there. And then you've got the kind of historical aspect that is the judging and assessing of that process, even though they're very disconnected because the people that assess and judge aren't makers.
Yes, absolutely. Although a part of going to art school and being an artist is the critique. I wasn't fearful of that. Mm. Such an important part of the creative process. To be amongst your peers and to stand up at the end and face the music and then go back and produce a better piece of work as a result. Mm. I think working in a studio in an art school as well, you're looking around, it's very competitive. It's not necessarily competitive in a bad way, in a really good way, because you think, oh, you know, look at that amazing piece that that person's working on. It pushes you to, I think there's a bit of thievery going on, but it's positive cross-contamination or collaboration, I think.
And you're learning. You're allowed to pinch and steal and borrow when you're at university, I think.
Yes, absolutely. So doing the course that I did was leading me towards where I ended up. It was interesting as well because one of the guys in my course at the time, he was going through a Jeff Koons stage. He was such a lovely guy. I was quite shocked when he started to show me some of the stuff, but of course I loved it. Who didn't at that stage? He was thinking about a career in advertising, and because we were talking about, we had a conversation, what are you going to do? I don't know. He was a highly conceptual artist. I was very much grounded in painting. You know, that's my big passion. And he said he was thinking about a career in advertising. And at that point, I thought, gosh, that makes sense. We're doing practical and it's creative, and it's just moving what we're already doing into a business space. And again, coming from my background, I was quite practical. I was desperate to get out and be independent. I didn't necessarily feel I could do that by being a painter. I would always have that skill. No one could take that away from me. That was me being creative and very, very indulgent. But creativity within a business sense, I knew I was going to have to tailor it and restrain it and probably move it around as people pointed. But it would be a way to make a career out of my skills as somebody who is creative and somebody who has developed in the way that I had. I went to an advertising agency, basically asked for a week's work experience, and they never left. 10 years later, I was the creative director, and the rest is history.
So quite a quick process coming out of university and finding your way. You had the idea, this is right for me, and then you just drove it through, basically.
There was a period of time where I was between university and getting my role at Smarts at the time it was called, where I thought my mum was going to kick me out of the house. I was doing that. And actually, again, I think the difficulty doing a creative degree, they don't prepare you for the real world. They help you accumulate knowledge. They help develop these skills, but they are not vocational in any way. And doing the course that I did, by the time you graduate, you're quite full of yourself. You know, you come out and think people will be beating a path to your door. You're so special. And that didn't happen. And I think there was an element of naivety from my part that I thought, crikey, you know, what am I going to do next? But luckily, I did have this idea that advertising seems good for me. But that was probably 6 months after I'd sort of stayed at home painting. I did a couple of projects. Bizarrely, at that point, I was doing paintings of car parks and building sites. And actually, I think I did some work for Bovis. They took some of my paintings. So that got me through a little bit of a time. But when I went into advertising, I was living in Glasgow at the time, went over to Edinburgh, had a space on someone's floor, and then I had to get digs, all that stuff. I never went home again.
How was it that whole, like you said, you felt like you'd got to a point and full of yourself in a really positive way? Because actually it's amazing when you get to that point and you really feel strong in your creativity. But then the realization in that 6 month period, oh, it's really different outside the university bubble. How did you manage that?
I think everybody at that age is quite naive, and that, I think it's a good thing. You know, once you get to a certain age in life, you start to worry about unnecessary things. Oh my God, I'm not going to make it through today. That's serious. And that's what I love about mentoring and speaking with young people. They have an outlook that's so uncontaminated that they're prepared to just go out there and get it. And I suppose that's what I was like. It was difficult from the financial aspect. And actually, if it had been too long, I probably would have felt demoralized by the fact that I wasn't going very quickly into a career. Particularly, it's harder now for younger people. But in those days, it was easier to step into a job from further education, especially if you come from a good quality establishment. You saw all your other peers getting jobs. In fact, some of them had things lined up even before they graduated. But it was necessary, I suppose. Actually, the other interesting thing was when I did graduate from Edinburgh, I was offered to do a postgrad. And I didn't take that on because I was so desperate to go out into the real world. And now that's another thing. I don't regret it, but if they gave me that opportunity now, I would just, I'd grab that.
All right. So I'd like to talk about when I visited Scotland Gather last year, and you and I both got chatting with you and your boss, the incredible founder and CEO of Stripe Communications, Juliet Simpson. And it came up that there's a lack of female creative talent in Edinburgh. Not through trying, but it just seems that the gender imbalance is still at play like it is across all the UK. So that is pretty worrying. And I'm wondering why you think that is.
I don't think necessarily there's a lack of talent. I think it's a lack of an environment where that talent feels nurtured. Mm-hmm. And I'm pleased to see that since 2004, when I felt I was one of very few people in the position I was, that there are more women in these creative roles. As far as why do I think there aren't more women in that role, I think it is because creativity comes with a bit of machismo culture, and it's not a great place for creativity to thrive. And it favours a certain type, and it's not necessarily female. That machismo culture, I think, if you look at even people, artists, for instance, like Jackson Pollock, it's absolutely necessary for certain things to have happened and, you know, existed in creative circles, but it should be isolated and put in the history books. I don't think it needs perpetuated. At Wacol, I think you'd agree that actually, I mean, that room was banging. Firstly,
absolutely,
it was incredible. But the one thing didn't matter. I mean, there's so many amazing people in that room, and I think most of them just wanted empathy and collaboration and to talk to each other. So it's connection. That's absolutely. So in order to address the pipeline, I suppose it's doing this. It's being a role model, actively putting yourself out there. I find that I come up with in quite a lot of searches because if you do Creative Director Female Scotland, you end up. Yeah, exactly. Statistically, you're going to find me. But when people approach me, no matter who they are, I will respond because I feel I've been lucky and it's been a difficult environment. And I want to make sure that I nurture and help people that are looking in this direction. I mean, the other thing that I think is that I have noticed throughout my career, or particularly recently, as you become more self-analytical when you get older as well, that's another thing. You go into these forums where, like, we did a speed mentoring session for creativity. I mean, it wasn't really recently, it was maybe a couple of years ago. And I went into the room as one of the creative directors, as one of the overseers. And I think there was maybe one other female there. Mm-hmm. When the students came in, it was probably 50-50. Mm. And that's when I was thinking, in fact, there was probably more females there than there were males looking for a career in creative provision. And I thought, how did that happen? When did that divide? When do these people all spin off this path? And that's when I was thinking it probably is because the legacy from, particularly in communications and in creativity, has got this machismo, quite exclusive vibe. It's like being in a chef's kitchen. You know, it's not hugely welcoming. I don't think it's particularly nurturing. It's not indigenous to female, really. We're much more responsive to positive encouragement as opposed to, that's wrong. You know, and also, I think there's a practical issue. It's very difficult to go into some of, particularly being a creative director, if you have a family, then it's very difficult to do the long hours in production, just randomly not being able to go home because something takes a lot longer than you would think. That, in a practical sense, is hard if you've got other commitments.
I definitely think that does impact the pipeline. There's statistics coming out that there's actually more women doing creative courses and art degrees But actually then over a kind of a 10-year period post graduating and getting into roles, it's the males that are still getting into the creative leadership roles, creative director roles, all that kind of thing. And the women start dropping off. And I think you're right. The culture isn't, well, I mean, we know, it's not a secret. There's a lot of toxicity in a lot of industries, not just the creative industries. Harvey Weinstein springs to mind. You know, that's a classic example of someone quite high up, but then it filters down and then people start dropping off.
Yeah, when you hear about that, the circles that they're in, I think that's what the disappointing part of it all is, that, yeah, that happened within Hollywood and, you know, within that sector, but actually that's happened close to home as well. We're less tolerant of it, but it's going to take a long time before that culture pulls away from creative provision, particularly creative communications.
Yeah, and the next generations are changing culturally and socially. The imbalance is being addressed by both genders now, but it's just getting rid of that hang on, isn't it? That kind of embedded or handed down culture. So back to your job, what is your creative process when receiving a brief?
Well, that's an interesting question, because actually in Stripe, because of what we do within an earned space, we're not really responding to a creative brief as such in the traditional sense, in the sense of what I was doing, kind of creative brief you would have in an advertising agency. So actually, if there was a proper creative brief written, it probably would be written by me or by our wonderful planner, Gemma Bell. It would be very seldom that actually, because I am in control of the creative narrative, that a proper creative brief would come to me out with me being far, far too nosy and far too controlling to have absolutely been part of that process to arrive at strategy. So we have other briefs that I would describe as springboards for ideas. Mm-hmm. So there are more prompts. And then we would go into brainstorming sessions to come up with ideas. And then I would probably scramble around grabbing those ideas, taking them, and where I can, starting to amplify them, push them a little bit more. We're always, always going to have a need for activations that are smaller. I think part of being a creative director within Stripe is actually knowing where to push and pull the creative, and not being conceited about it or making it absolutely forefront, is being able to have the humility to pull back. And I am not saying, because I would not allow it, that we are less creative. Being a creative director is not being the most creative person in the agency, which sometimes I think people think is the case, which is exhausting. Mm-hmm. It's actually knowing where to put the appropriate creative and how much to push and pull. And again, people talking about digital and social and the impact it's had on creative output. Actual fact, creativity is highly migratory. Mm-hmm. And within the social or digital environment, the platforms they're massively diverse and actually constantly changing, constantly the new platforms arriving. So it's knowing not just about the creative that you put as an output, but being creative about the platforms that you put the creative, you know, it's a self-perpetuating thing.
I'm wondering if you could put a little bit of meat on the bones with that and maybe give us a bit of a breakdown of what Stripe does and earn space. Just thinking, if someone was listening, they might not like necessarily understand that kind of language. So kind of how that works. And when you talk about getting a brief and you being involved in all those ideas and nurturing them and really like making judgments and spreading the creativity through exchange at everyone in Stripe, I'd love to hear more about that.
Before I was working full time for Stripe, I started to come in as a consultant, and that was probably 7-8 years ago, as the digital social remit was growing tenfold. Mm-hmm. I don't necessarily think that Stripe really, because it's PR, had a need or a want for a creative director and a creative hub, but they certainly needed me. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know necessarily why they needed me. Yeah, there was bolt-on design provision that they needed. As I was coming in as a consultant, it was one day a week, and then it was more and more. And then I would say that I wound myself in through the cracks in the pavement, or grew in through the cracks in the pavement into Stripe, because I was there as an extra provision. And then, because I'm nosy, because I want to see more, and I was interested at the time of coming back into agency. My services started to blend into Stripes more. When I talk about earned media, I mean we're getting people to endorse us, mostly for free, so that our weight is very heavily on telling stories. But as part of the provision, because of social media, because of digital, we have to provide content. We also have to move into a space where influencers are. I don't think that's different to necessarily what you would do in the olden days in PR. Influencers are just people that are promoting your product, but they're paid. You pay influencers, obviously. So that's where the blend is happening in between PR and advertising.
So hugely diverse as well. And you're often, I imagine, really looking at like jobs coming in and thinking, what's the best solution? Like you said, because you don't favor a channel and you aren't constricted by advertising agencies' kind of, I guess, creative process and structure.
That comes from the heritage, my heritage as well, because I worked for myself and I was quite multiplicitous. So we don't have to say, put all our eggs in one basket and say, this is the route that you have to go in terms of media. We can be much more agile, much more flexible. And we've got that resource to jump around a little bit more and foster that.
Yeah, I guess as well, like it's a really lovely space to be creative as well, because there's lots of room. You can really think in different ways of the best way to address or deliver something.
Absolutely. If I look back to being in a creative department in an advertising agency, it was so heavy, idea heavy. But I think what's really nice is lightweight ideas are relevant as the big picture idea. Mm. From my point of view as creative director, I am more control of the earlier stages of the pipeline. So pushing that brand creative narrative forward so that we've got a wider space to springboard and create ideas from, and then to nurture and foster those ideas. And then at the end of the line, I come back into my role as a brand designer, mm-hmm. a print expert, art director. I'm also the lead creative within our in-house creative provision. So I will oversee the actual creative output, the production, quality, you know, timelines, etc.
You mentioned their creative agencies and the kind of big ideas and that being really heavy in terms of that process, which kind of pushed you off to start Little Ego. So I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about that taking that step to going freelance, having your own Little Ego company, and then what that gave you in terms of a difference to working in an agency.
When I was working in an agency, my biggest challenge was becoming a mother and a creative director at the same time. I think the difficulty from my point of view was two huge roles converging in my life at the same time at a quite young age. It wasn't until that point that I started noticing the environment around me. You know, we talk about this kind of machismo. Before that, I just thought, that's what it is. You know, this is advertising. I've arrived in, you know, Scotland's version of Saatchi. But once I took on those two roles, I suddenly realised how difficult it is to flourish. It wasn't necessarily I wasn't good at my job. It was more difficult to do my job. Other than giving me enhanced maternity leave, there was no culture of understanding.
The culture doesn't support caring for others, regardless of children or elderly parents or someone that's ill.
Yes, absolutely right. I got enhanced maternity leave, but when I came back, I felt that mentioning anything negative as a result of having a baby was bad for my job. It was being weak or bringing something to work that was unnecessary. All my colleagues that I worked with, well, not all of them, but most of them were lovely people, and I still am really, really friendly with them. But there was just no support, because there was no empathy. There was nobody else there in that position. And even if there was, they would probably have to not bring it to work too. So it wasn't anything to do with the rewards and recognition necessarily of being a mother. It was to do with the environment, the culture at the time. I think it was as much about the time as to do with the role and the type of work that I was in. I became increasingly more aware at the time a splintering of the media, and I noticed that happening. And actually, that modular advertising model
was starting to look a little bit archaic. It was starting to become unable to be sustainable because actually, or there were smaller creative services popping up everywhere to provide specialist aspects of the bigger role. In the olden days, people used to be able to come up with one campaign and then it was just poster campaign, TV campaign, radio campaign, and that's all the media you had. Whereas all the splintering of the media suddenly made that model non-sustainable. At that point, I was kind of feeling not necessarily uncomfortable. I was starting to not enjoy working, not necessarily because of the content of my job, because of the environment and because of the stage I was at and the circumstances I was in. So I started to look around me, and one thing I did notice was people, when they've got a formula that works, are so reluctant to change. And that's when I just thought, wake up, look around you. You know, it's so egotistical for this to be about you. We've got to solve these issues on behalf of our clients. And if we don't do that, then we're not a business. We're just indulgent individuals who are, you know, not really listening or looking around us. I used to think, if I ever started out my own, I'm going to call myself Little Ego, because the egos in this room are holding us back. And when I had my second child, I thought, I'm going to start up on my own. And I was quite happy to do that because there was enough work because of what was happening with digital. There was enough pieces of work for me to actually continue to do what I loved, to continue to grow my career, but also not have all the negativity that was coming with that change and with that transfer and with culture. I didn't want to bring or subject myself or my family to that. And that's when Little Ego started. And again, Little Ego is all about me being able to offer my professional services and skills, but also to respond to a brief, to respond to a business need, not to go out and be self-indulgent with my creative.
It's amazing. And you also obviously had some real entrepreneurial flair or drive or initiative. Did you always know that was there? Or did that kind of just surprise you when you were like, I've had enough of this, I'm going to set up?
I was actually quite entrepreneurial when I started out on my own. I was actually so full of energy and just, I mean, I didn't need to start a brand, but that's where I came from. I mean, it was indigenous. I was entrepreneurial from the point of view as well that when I started out, I was acutely aware of how slow business invoicing and payment is. So I was already doing, because it's a stage in your life, you go through all these stages. I was doing a lot of my friends' wedding invitations. It wasn't necessarily because I wanted to do it, but I was there, they asked me to, and I just thought, well, that's quite an easy way to generate an income. And pairing up retail and design, obviously based on design, and business design solutions allowed me to, because obviously retail is upfront payment, I was able to start that business right from scratch with money coming in the door. And again, had I known now what I know now, I probably would have been, you know, more skeptical and far more scared. But I just went out there because I thought, well, all I have to do is do sell X, X, and X, and do X, X, and X, and that equals Y, and that's me. I'll be generating an income. In terms of generating an income right from the start, I was quite entrepreneurial. I look back now and think, who was that person?
But you obviously spotted gaps in the market because you talked about the industry and the approach changing. And then you also were like, I love that. You were like, I need cash flow whilst I'm building the other bits that I really want to do. So you're definitely entrepreneurial.
I actually like to describe myself as a multi-potentialist as opposed to a multitasker or a jack of all trades. Because it is opportunity spotting. It is about looking for gaps. And again, I think, you know, we come from a generation that was very much kind of, you go from university to a career and then you retire and make sure you have a pension. Whereas I see younger and actually kind of healthier attitude toward, you know, what you do to earn money over the course of your life, as opposed to go in and just be institutionalized and restricted. I actually think that point of my life, I was quite millennial because I was doing things being a bit of a slasher. It was just kind of, well, the output of that will be that. So therefore, for that point of time, and I'll upskill and then I'll move that over to this department. But at the same time, you know, from a
creative director point of view, from an art director point of view, I wasn't constantly working with big clients. I was working with smaller boutique kind of clients. And it would never necessarily be the same thing that I would be giving them or providing them with. I could be doing anything from, again, I'm talking about humility, doing a small leaflet, a tiny piece of comms, to going in and looking at their internal brand and doing a huge strategic piece for them. But what was important to me was being very, very close to the beating heart of those clients and to having those customer-client relationships that, again, spurned little ego, because, you know, you don't have access to the clients and, you know, you're quite remote. But this was a way back in to sort of really feel close to what I was doing and enjoying it, enjoying that aspect.
Sounds like heaps of fun as well. And like, what a change. Like you said, you were completely energized by it. And I think that's actually the ticket, isn't it? Something that can keep driving you.
Yeah, absolutely. Working on your own suited me at that point for the various reasons, my circumstances, the marketplace at the time. Having said that, after a certain amount of time, I felt the need to have a bit more access to a team, to become part of that process within an agency where you're focusing more on your expertise, having access to bigger clients more regularly. It wasn't, I did have some big clients, but they weren't always there. And also, my children were growing up, and actually a lot of the reasons why I worked for myself was that flexibility and need to be around. Not, and there's sometimes I was there physically, but not always mentally. I think that's always been the case. So going back to agency came at the right stage, just as coming out of agency came at the right stage for me. Starting out at advertising, then being on my own, and then going into Stripe, I had the exact kind of skills that Stripe in particular needed because of its heritage coming from PR and not from a advertising out of home paid space.
Which is a lovely segue into, is there a typical day for you in your role as creative director at Stripe?
Yes, there is. And then I'll go and sit at my desk and it won't be. So I have days where there's more meetings, particularly as part of the leadership team. We'll go in and that's when we plan and we look at the business, we look at P&L, we look at our new business pipeline, we plan our teams, we plan our resource. That's probably about the only part of the week that is a typical day, because the work is so diverse and so different. It can go from the sublime to the ridiculous. I can be in a strategic narrative session, you know, on control, and then I can be literally putting together a piece of content for a story for one of our clients. But that's what I absolutely love about the role that I do. It's not everybody's cup of tea to be, you know, kind of to be able to
chopping and changing.
Yeah, chopping and changing. Yeah. But it suits me.
So can you tell me what you love about being a creative director?
What I love about my role is being part of a team, but I love the creativity. I love the fact that I can look into businesses, I can go forensically into companies and see them from the inside out. I think it's amazing to be called in to answer a question for somebody who doesn't know how to find that answer. Got that skill set to be able to see through the matrix is what I sometimes say. You know, it's just the same way that I've actually got a client right now who, as a company, highly creative, but they're actually a risk management consultant, so all STEM, quite straight. They just think it's utterly amazing that I can come in and, you know, see the picture in the way that I do. But I couldn't go in and, you know, analyze how to make a nuclear power station stay safe. You know, I don't need to know that. It's sharing creativity.
What advice would you give to someone who is aspiring to be a creative director?
Always defend your idea. And I don't mean necessarily defend the idea because you want to go home and watch Netflix. I mean, if you can defend your idea, you can sell it. If you're defending your idea, then the chances are that you have gone through a very rigorous creative process. It's all quite circular from the point of view that if you've gone through the creative process, you can talk about it, you know that intimately, can live and breathe that idea.
It's so important, isn't it? And also, if you know it's a good idea, to stand up for it.
Absolutely, yes.
All right. So can you tell me how you fuel your creativity? You talked about you absolutely loving painting. Do you still paint?
Not as much as I'd like to. I do occasionally dabble in a bit of sketching and painting. In fact, I would come to somewhere like this, Jupiter Artland. In fact, The last time I was here, I was at a festival. I think it is massively important to, you know, kind of get out and absorb the world around you, but not just look to understand. And then you can use it, you know, that you have access to in your mind palace. Actually, I think a very interesting quote is, nothing comes from nothing. We've constantly got to feed that inner beast that sparks and inspires. I think that's George Louis. For me, it's looking around the world and questioning what you see. And then you will be able to take that understanding and knowledge and regurgitate it in a different way when people need that creative output from you in a professional arena.
Sadly, Hilary, we're coming to the end of the interview, and I have so loved talking with you. You are sitting in front of the most beautiful Grayson Perry tapestry, so it's been like a visual feast while we've been chatting. It's been wonderful. Before you go, I'm wondering if you can tell me what you've got coming up in the next couple of weeks or months, creatively or personally.
From a work perspective, we've got a nice brand project coming in the door. And again, because Stripe is mainstay is more PR, this is a major coup from my perspective. We've got a pitch coming up in a couple of weeks that will absorb a huge amount of my time. The way I do that is basically go off, start the process by just going into my cave at home. I like to work occasionally, or most weeks, at least one day at home so that I kind of hide away and just do a huge amount of research. Just switch my mind off to office distractions, and then we'll respond to the pitch.
So heaps coming up.
Yeah, heaps coming up.
Yeah. So something I ask everyone before we sign off is, what is a career or job in the creative industries you know little about and you'd like to know maybe more about? And then potentially I can find someone in that role and get them on.
Well, actually, you could probably answer this for me, okay. Winnie. Actually, for my dissertation at a university, yeah. I wrote about a stage designer called Edward Gordon Craig. I actually thought I might go into set design, particularly in theatre.
Yeah.
So I would like to see a theatre designer.
Okay.
Or hear a little bit more about that creative career. I think that would be very interesting.
Yeah, it's a fascinating role. Yeah, I've got a few friends. So yeah, that should be an easy one to solve, actually, that work in stage design and costume design. Okay, and finally, is there an amazing creative woman that you would love to hear on Greater Than 1% and potentially I could reach out and get them on?
Been lucky enough to meet recently amazing woman called Isadora Kay.
Great name.
Absolutely. You think she's a ballerina. Yeah. She's not. Actually, it's spelled Q-U-A-Y, just as in key. She is a gender and crisis coordinator for Crisis International.
Wow.
That's easy for me to say.
Yeah.
We've spoken a lot over the course of time because we both got puppy at the same time. We met on the beach.
Yeah.
And she's just hugely interesting. And actually, when I met you, I told her all about you because her main specialism is female gender equality. But I would never give justice just to how interesting what she does is, or just how different what she provides daily is. But we both came to the conclusion, or I came to the conclusion, then told her, because I said I quite like to mention you at the end of this podcast. Don't be concerned if you get a phone call from Rennie. That she's going in and she's listening to other people's stories, and she's helping them in a creative way communicate that narrative through her insight and knowledge and creativity. So her role is very similar to mine. It's not creating a piece of output. Mm-hmm. But she has to think creatively and she has to do it on a very human level. And I think in order to do that, that's a special and amazing thing. And I'd love to know more about it.
She sounds incredible. I want to know more about her as well. Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely hook me up with her. I'd love to chat to her just on a personal level as well.
Oh, God, yeah, she's so interesting.
Yeah. Hilary, I've so loved catching up with you. I've loved being in Edinburgh. And again, thank you so much for your assistance to help us get here. Be in contact with some great creative women. So yeah, thank you.
Thank you so much. That's been so much fun.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed, please write a review and rate, as that helps other people find Greater Than 11%. Also, stay subscribed to keep up to date on the weekly releases.